Morning, and thank you for tuning in this morning to Just Us Talk with Tisha. We are here today on Periscope. Thank you for everyone joining us on Periscope. Thank you for those of you who are every week I do that. So thank you to those of you who are joining us on Twitter, on Facebook, and any other avenues which people are tuning in to today's show. Thank you so much. Today, it's interesting because I actually did a radio show yesterday. So what I do actually is I do the weekly show, which obviously we're here on Wednesday the 10th, but every month I do a show at 10 o'clock at the radio station, and we just actually got to, we've been upgraded, yay for upgrade, so we've been upgraded to FM because we are on WOL 1450 AM at 10 o'clock here in Maryland. And now we are on 95.9 also at 10 o'clock. And 95.9 obviously is FM. So that is absolutely fantastic. So now we have more listeners, more people who have access to the information that I believe is very, very important to helping people to understand the various issues, whether they be legal issues, social issues, or whatever else people are needing at that time. So I'm very, very grateful to have other avenues with which people can receive information, because here at Just Us Talk with Tisha, that is what we're about. We're about giving people information as it relates to the law. So so yesterday I did a fill-in radio show for one of my friends, who went out of town, I guess, for Thanksgiving. And when I just tell you, it was a mess. It was a mess because I ended up having to get there a few minutes late because there was an accident. And then not only was there an accident, as we know, this is how life works, there just couldn't be an accident. There was an accident, and there was road construction on two sections of the interstate. So I was completely blown. So needless to say, I did not get all of the information out that I wanted to, and so if anyone listened to that, I absolutely apologize for being completely disoriented as a result of the time constraints that we are under. Nevertheless, today we are going to talk about protective orders again, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I'm realizing that more and more people are filing for protective orders. If there's some reason in particular. I don't know if, the events that are going on in our country, which obviously are subjecting more people to being assaulted and to violence and things like that, more people are filing peace orders and protective orders. And, a lot of people are going to spend time with family over the next couple of days. And if your family is anything like my family is absolutely crazy. So if your family is any type of crazy like mine is, So, we've talked a lot in the last few weeks about the events that are going on in our country, right? Because a lot of people, and again, we're 2 weeks out, I don't anticipate the fear that people are experiencing. I don't anticipate that fear to subside at any point in the near future because it's real, right? This is real. People are really painting swastikas on people's property. People are really being victimized. I heard a very, very sad story of a young man, I believe he was from Saudi Arabia, who was killed by the term white supremacist. I don't like that term, but I'm going to tell you why. Because I don't know about you, but I know that they are not supreme to me, and therefore I will not refer to them as white supremacists. Also, always, although that has been the term that has been used, forever. And now people have adapted, or I should say they have adapted this new term, alt-right, which I'm really not sure what that really means. But here's the thing. All of these new terms to make it, I think they're all terms to make this behavior, which is completely abnormal, to make this behavior somehow normalized and to get to digest the new norm that they'd like to create to make it more palatable, which is absolutely insane. And so on this show and in my life, I will not refer to them as alt-right because I don't know what that means, first of all, and it's ludicrous because I'm not going to normalize it. I'm not going to refer to them as white supremacists because they are certainly not supreme to me. They are not supreme to you. They are not supreme beings. And so I will not refer to them as white supremacists. I will call them white nationalists. And it's very unfortunate that people are being victimized. We're seeing an influx in criminal charges being filed. We're seeing an influx, and like I said, in victimization, in peace orders, and protective orders, and all of those things being filed. And so as an attorney, part of what I do is, you know, not as just an attorney, but it certainly is one of the things that is factored into all of this, right? Because my job is, as I swore to the state of Maryland, is to uphold the laws of the state of Maryland. And in no way is it okay for you to victimize other people because you don't like what they stand for, you don't like how they look, you don't like what they believe. Sometimes I really don't even know how to put everything that I'm saying into words because it's so much. Like I was having a conversation, and I know I'm kind of digressing a little bit, but I promise I'll bring it back. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. Most of my friends are very, very smart. So I was having a conversation, and I was talking about, we were trying to talk about different solutions, different things that we can do as, you know, regular, ordinary citizens, right? He's also an attorney. But things that we can do as citizens to help, you know what I mean, in this situation. Because a lot of people, you know, people are kind of just in different places, right? And that's fine. Everyone processes grief and change and all these things very, very differently. So some people are very, very fired up, pumped up, ready to try to make a difference and things like that, and that's absolutely fantastic. There are people that are still grieving the loss of what they knew or what they believed was this country, right? And then there are other people, and I think this is where I fall into the category. So I've done my whole grieving, so to speak. But I think I'm in a place where I feel like there's so much information, and I don't know if anybody feels like that as well, but there's so much information, right? So many things, like every single day there's another crazy thing that has happened as it relates to this new administration, and it's scary. It's scary for people who have been attacked over the last 18 months by this new president-elect. And so, you know, some people just don't know what to do, and so there's this overwhelming amount of information, and it's constantly coming in. And so this is why a few weeks ago I talked about practicing self-care. And the reason is because you can be absolutely inundated with information, and it sometimes it can make you sad and depressed and hopeless. And I certainly don't want that for people, although I know that everyone processes differently. But I'm in the sort of realm where it's so much information that it's like, oh, my God, like, I just have to stop. You know what I mean? I feel like I can't take any more information. I just can't take any more. But I'm almost at that place where it's like, okay, we have to galvanize our efforts and do what we can to try to have some sort of impact on things as they are or as they will be or whatever the case. I think some of the things that are important, and I promise I'm going to bring it back, some of the things that are important are looking for grassroots organizations because I think that's where the impact is going to come. If we've learned nothing else over this election, the change is not going to come from the government. The change is going to come from you. The change is going to come from me and people like us. Who care enough about, our fellow, human beings enough to say, okay, this is wrong. What's happening to people is wrong. And if we believe in protecting our Constitution. And the thing I find amazing is a lot of these people who are doing these things claim that they believe in the United States Constitution. And I find that absurd based on wanting to essentially step on people's rights to speak freely, to step on people's right to peacefully assemble. So you have people that essentially want protesters to be called terrorists, and you know they're trying to pass different laws to to label protesters peaceful protesters, right? In such a way as to make them to criminalize peaceful protest. And the thing is that if we care anything about our Constitution, it's important to fight against that type of stuff because it's hateful. It's very, very hateful. And its only purpose is to really silence people that you don't share their views, right? And I can't support that. I cannot support people who want to oppress other people in any sort of way. So that's been a lot, right? And this has been, you'll hear me talk about this a lot because it is something that impacts us every single day. And just thinking about what potential, essentially who can be appointed to the Supreme Court is scary. It's very, very scary because if you know anything about how this government works, you know obviously that the Supreme Court is in our land. And if you have people on the Supreme Court who share the views or are sympathizers with white nationalists, that's problematic for the rest of us who are not straight white men, right? And that breaks my heart. It really does, because that's not the country that I thought we were. And obviously I knew that we were a country of a lot of problems. But I worked in New York after 9/11, and the thing that I learned was that people are very, very resilient. People are very resilient. And two, that when there's when people are really, really faced with tragedy, the American people, people will come together. And so that gave me hope. And so the last couple of weeks, to see the things that have happened have just been, I don't know. It's been a lot, though. And I've had this conversation with numerous people over the last 2 weeks. And I don't think those conversations are going to stop. I think they're very helpful because they help us on what we need to do. And one of the things that I'd like to impress upon people is essentially when you're meeting people in your everyday life, in business, in relationships, whatever the case may be, I think if we exercise just three fundamental things, I do think that we can at least start to make some sort of difference on a human level. Because sometimes as human beings, we have this tendency to, how can I put this, to just essentially disrespect other people. And I think that if we broke it all the way down to something as simple as how we communicate with one another, I think that it would make a fundamental difference. So I'm going to kind of give you 3 points, right? So first, when you come in contact with other people, make sure that your exchanges with them are first pleasant, right? And I'm not really talking about, the fake pleasantries, even though, sometimes if it has to be, it has to be. And if they can't be pleasant, make sure they're at least respectful, because sometimes we will disagree with people. But I think one of the things that I love about our current president is, he said we can disagree without being disagreeable. And I firmly, firmly believe that, because obviously I'm in a very adversarial profession, right? And so I do believe that you can disagree with people, right, without being disagreeable. Now, I do have a caveat to that. If our disagreement is based on your belief in oppression, right? I think that's something completely different, right? Because I certainly am not going to have conversations with people if their fundamental beliefs are based on my oppression and the oppression of other people, because that's just not right. And finally, if your conversations cannot be pleasant, and they cannot be respectful, at least make sure they're on something that is substantive, right? Because I think a lot of times we waste time having conversations about foolishness, things that do not seek to uplift, do not seek to inform, and essentially are just kind of frivolous and nonsensical. And so if you have conversations, make sure, like I said, they are pleasant. If not pleasant, make sure they're respectful. If not respectful, make sure they're at least of something of substantive import. So that's kind of my, you know, my two cents about that. And as I bring it back, I think it is important to have these conversations as people go home over the holidays and spend time with families. And I think we have a caller. Caller, are you there? A caller or a listener. Let's see. So, you guys, I could never figure this out, right? I'm always trying to figure out how to do this. I don't know if I'm really good at this. Let's see. Good morning, caller. Are you there? Okay, so we're gonna try this again. I'm gonna mute the caller. And see if I can get, try not to hang up, right? Because I do this all the time. I end up hanging up on people. I think this is how you do it. Oh, no, that's not it either. Okay, I can't figure this out. Anyway, we will figure this out eventually, I promise. So I think that as we go home and we spend time with family, just if you can employ those things, I think it will make a world of difference. And I should also say that if they can't be either of those three things, I would say don't engage the conversation, because part of practicing self-care is taking care of yourself, right? And so if you're taking care of yourself, you know, it's important to not engage in conversations that are going to be harmful to you. Those are my thoughts about that. Now, how do I bring this full circle? Because I told you I would. As we're spending time with family or whomever, having these conversations that are, frankly, very difficult, or at least can be very, very difficult, because they may be about things that you don't necessarily agree with 100%. So this is why I said, you know, if you employ those three things, it'll help to avoid peace orders and protective orders, right? So to bring it back, I had a case this week that was a protective order case, and very, very interesting. I do protective order cases a lot, and, you know, they're always tough, right? Because as I stated a couple weeks ago in one of my shows, as of October 1st, 2015, the state of Maryland made it easier for victims of crime to get protective orders. And they did that by lowering the standard of proof by which you had to prove in order to get a protective order, right? So now the standard is what's called preponderance of the evidence. So essentially, if the court can find that it's more likely than not that the person that you are alleging to be the perpetrator is the perpetrator and did commit the things that you're saying they did, then likely a protective order will be entered. But the question is that I was faced with is what happens when it's a situation where your child, right, is the person that you're accusing of abusing you. That's tough, right? I find myself in a bit of a quagmire because I don't know how to answer that question. I'm a lawyer. I'm very, very smart. But here's the thing. I don't purport to know every single thing. It's not possible, right? I may think I know everything, but I don't. And that's really tough because sometimes you're faced with issues as a lawyer and as a human being that you just don't have the answers to, that there's really no win-win. So you have a situation where your child is the person that is abusing the parent. Parent does anything to protect themselves and the child sustains any sort of injury, guess what? In the state of Maryland, physical abuse is, you know, any sort of, any sort of abuse, like, you know, physical abuse where you have, like, maybe scratches or bruises or anything like that on the child. Now, what if the child sustained those injuries because the parent was physically trying to get this child off of them? Now, technically, based on the black letter law, the parent has now committed child abuse. That's tough. That's really, really tough. And so as a parent, do you throw yourself under the bus? You know, do you have your child painted as an abuser? Or do you find yourself being labeled a child abuser? I don't know the answer to that question. But I can tell you that it's one that's very, very difficult. So if you find yourself in this situation, I really think that it's important to talk. Make sure you talk to a lawyer, because again, the facts and circumstances of every single case, as I say this week after week, the facts and circumstances are different for every single person, and just the change of one fact, right, can change the outcome in your case. So you want to be very, very careful. I want to be clear. That you need to speak to a lawyer about whatever your legal case is. What I'm telling you right now should not be construed as legal advice, because I don't know your situation personally, but your situation needs to be assessed by a lawyer. Now, when it comes to protective orders, if you find yourself over Thanksgiving wanting to, you know, kill your family, please don't kill your family, but, you know, and obviously I'm using, you know, hyperbole. I don't think people are really going to kill their parents or their families. I hope not. And I'm certainly not advocating that. But if you find yourself in a situation, you know, with your spouse or, you know, someone in, you know, it's that you, you know, that someone that you're related to romantically, whatever the case may be, and you need to seek a protective order, we talked a few weeks ago about how to do that. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to regurgitate that information again. But I did talk to you guys about that, so you can take a look at that on some of our Periscope, you know, on some of our Periscope thing a couple of weeks ago. And, I think we do have a question. Hold on just a second. Let me see if I can do this. Hello, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Do you have a question?
Can you hear? Yes.
I can hear you.
My question is pertaining to the child that is, I guess, physically abusing their parents,
mm-hmm.
maybe figuring out if there's a mental health issue happening where the parent can take the child in for treatment. That way it won't become a legal issue to where someone is behind bars, I'm thinking.
Okay. Well, Colin, do you have, in terms of you know, I'm not a medical professional, but tell me how is that done? Like, say for instance, if a child is, you know, under the age of 15, what does that look like? Because I think one of the concerns and one of the things that parents are faced with is, you know, is my child going to be institutionalized? You know, I think sometimes these are some of the fears that parents have when they're dealing with a child who may have some of those issues, because I do think you may be right that, you know, that may be important. But is there a way for parents to avoid, one, having their child labeled? Because I've talked to parents who have had that very same thing, and they don't want their child to be, quote, unquote, in the system, right? They don't want their child to be labeled as a criminal or as someone who is, quote, unquote, crazy. I know that that's not a clinical term, but these are just some of the things that I've heard. How would someone avoid that if that's at all possible?
Well, sometimes when children are acting out physically, there is probably an underlying issue. Some children might have issues with autism or Asperger's,
mm-hmm.
and the parents themselves might not be educated or be aware that these things are happening with their children for various reasons. One, those issues probably might not even come up within the household or within the community, the parents' community.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes there are other issues happening with children, and parents might need to be educated about some of the things that might be happening. So looking at it from a perspective as how can I help my child? What is happening here? And probably seeking out ways to get that child evaluated. Now, there are different treatment alternatives for that that can potentially avoid a legal situation where, you know, the parent is now in behind bars, or, you know, the kid is labeled and is now in a juvenile situation with the court system. So there's that happening. And I think sometimes even for children who are oppositional defiant, there are programs out there as well. So, you know, you do have children who are defiant, but I think there are probably diversion programs or maybe like wilderness programs that might be. I think it all comes down to finding out the underlying issue of what's happening with
mm-hmm.
your child and trying to figure out what resources are available to help.
Okay.
Because sometimes
and
in some communities.
And Carla, I just want to explain because the people on Periscope aren't able to hear our exchange. So I just want to make sure that the people on Periscope are kind of understanding what's happening. So the caller is stating that there are different ways that children can be treated through the mental health profession, and she stated there may be something that may be undiagnosed, such as like something like oppositional defiance or Asperger's,
autism.
Mm-hmm. So there are other there are possible mental health diagnoses that the parent may not be aware of. And it may be important for the parent to go ahead and get their child assessed and treated. Now, caller, we're almost out of time, but I want to ask, if parents are going through, if a parent decides, right, to have their child evaluated, is there a way to keep their child, quote, unquote, out of the system? And by the system, I'm not really talking about the court system. I'm more so talking about the mental health system because, you know, presumptively those records will follow the child throughout their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you think that if a child has a quote-unquote label that may sometimes have a deleterious effect on the child's behavior?
It can. And at the end of the day, you want to find out what's happening with your child, and as a parent, what are your best options in helping
mm-hmm.
your child?
So it's more so, what you're saying, it's more so about exploring options.
Right.
Okay. Well, caller,
okay.
What was your name, caller?
My name is Carrie.
Okay. And Carrie, are you a mental health professional?
Yes, I am.
You seem to know a lot about this stuff, so, okay. Well, Carla, since we're almost out of time, maybe we can have you back on the show, and maybe you can kind of tell us a little bit more about some of these things because, you know, obviously when people are going through divorce and custody and child support and all these kinds of things, sometimes people do need to seek the help of a mental health professional, and so that may be something that may be helpful to our listeners. So thank you so much, Carla. We appreciate it.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Now, we're almost out of time, but I want to kind of wrap things up. So as you are going to talk to your families and spend time over the holidays, make sure that your conversations are pleasant. If not pleasant, then respectful. If not respectful, make sure that they're about something of substance. And I think that will really help people to have less peace orders, protective orders, and getting involved in the quote-unquote system. Thank you so much for listening to Just Us Talks with Tisha. We're here every Wednesday, 10 o'clock. You can call us at 301-744-7996 or visit our website at www.tshillmanlaw.com. Thank you so much. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next week.